The World This Week. News and analysis. I'm Alan Jackson, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. This past week began with a political bombshell on the domestic scene and ended with a cloud of political fallout from an actual explosion in the South Pacific. The protests over both were numerous. It was on Monday, as the Senate Watergate Committee resumed its public hearings, that former White House aide, now FAA Director Alexander Butterfield, told the Committee of Secret Recording Devices to tape presidential phone conversations and meetings. In the interest of history, he said.
There was no doubt in my mind that they were installed to record things for posterity, for the Nixon Library. The president was very conscious of that kind of thing. We had quite an elaborate setup at the White House for the collection and preservation of documents and of things which transpired in the way of business of state.
On whose authority were they installed, Mr. Butterfield?
On the president's authority by way of Mr. Haldeman and Mr. Higby.
Revelation of those taped White House conversations promptly touched off a new conflict between the legislative and executive branches of government. Whether the Senate Watergate Committee should have access to those tapes. Committee Chairman Sam Rubin stated his position clearly.
There is no right on the part of the president to keep secret any information which would relate solely to campaign efforts to get him reelected president, because there's nothing in the Constitution that requires a president to run for reelection. So it's not an official duty. And furthermore, since the Constitution does not authorize the president or his aides to engage in wrongdoing, the Constitution can't possibly be stretched to give the president the power to withhold information which might possibly disclose wrongdoing.
Some presidential aides indicate that the president will refuse to allow the committee to have access to the tapes on constitutional grounds. Mr. Nixon, now recovered from his bout with pneumonia, made it plain on his emergence from the hospital that he has no thought of abandoning his job.
I'm going to use a phrase that my Ohio father used to use. Any suggestion that this president's ever going to slow down while he's president, or is ever going to leave this office until he continues to do the job and finishes the job he was elected to do, anyone who suggests that, that's just plain poppycock.
From the hospital, the president journeyed to Camp David to continue recuperation and, reportedly, to draft his reply to the request made by the Irvin Committee. 2 days before he left the hospital this week, the president issued a statement outlining details of Phase 4 of his anti-inflation program. The first step, a start in lifting price ceilings on food. Secretary of Agriculture Earl Butz explained the reasoning on this.
The price freeze was strictly counterproductive. It was discouraging output. And the best antidote for inflation of anything is to have the product there. We've been moving in the wrong direction. Now we want to reverse it and get the product there, and I'm sure our farmers will respond.
Correspondent Gary Shepard took a consumer's viewpoint straight at the cash register on the checkout counter.
Within hours after the freeze on food prices had been lifted, wholesale food prices began going up. By the end of the week, retail prices began rising too, with pork, poultry, eggs, and milk leading the way. Some food industry experts are now forecasting that eggs will be selling for $1 a dozen before long, pork and bacon for $2 a pound. There's a threat of a beef shortage in mid-August, since beef prices are still frozen, and cattle raisers are expected to withhold their animals from the market until the freeze expires on the 12th of September and prices are free to rise. The nation's big three automakers have gone on record. They intend to ask for permission under the provisions of Phase 4 to raise prices on 1974 model cars and trucks. The message to most economists is now clear. Despite Phase 4, the battle to control inflation has been lost, at least for the rest of the year.
Observers abroad were concerned with other aspects of Phase 4, in particular its effect, if any, on the international money markets. Charles Collingwood reports from London.
Commenting on the administration's Phase 4 economic measures, Secretary of the Treasury Shultz predicted that they would significantly strengthen the dollar abroad. Well, so far at least, they haven't. Indeed, after a day to digest Phase 4, the dollar dropped quite sharply on European exchanges while the price of gold rallied. Traders criticized Phase 4 as being only a series of stopgap measures which don't get at the root of American economic troubles. However, Phase 4 is by no means the only reason for the renewed decline of the dollar. One important currency dealer in London observed that as long as the Watergate affair goes on, almost any economic news from the United States will be interpreted unfavorably. It's illogical, he said, but that's how it is.
There were other revelations in Washington this week. Admission by the Pentagon that it had deliberately sent false information to Congress to cover up then-secret bombing of Cambodia starting in 69. Pentagon spokesman Jerry Friedheim apologized to the press for having given reporters copies of the now declassified report, knowing that it was inaccurate and misleading.
Obviously, I'm always interested in you having accurate information, and I regret that you didn't get it in this one instance. The error was made, and it was an error. In retrospect, the documents should not have gone to either the Congress or you unless we were prepared to provide them in a candid and complete way.
The Pentagon revelation only stiffened congressional resolve to stand firm on the new deadline for ending all bombing in Cambodia, the 15th of next month, under the compromise worked out by Congress and the White House. And Senate Majority Leader Mansfield served notice this week that plans have been made to recall Congress from its August recess if that bombing deadline isn't met. In the same vein, the Senate this week approved a bipartisan war powers bill authored by Democratic Senator Humphrey and Republican Senator Javits. Humphrey explained the purpose.
This bill restores the constitutional power of both branches of government insofar as national security is concerned and the use of the American armed forces. It does not tie a president's hands, but it does not allow him to involve us in wars without the consent of Congress.
A similar measure was approved by the House 2 days earlier. There were strange political doings in the Arab world this week, and one more attempt by Arab leaders to work together seemed to fall apart. Bob Allison explains from Cairo.
The plans of Egypt and Libya to merge into one nation are beset by many big problems. The biggest one is Libyan leader Colonel Muammar Gaddafi. In any merger, Anwar Sadat of Egypt would be president, Colonel Gaddafi vice president. Sadat is a man who insists on running his own shop. But Gaddafi is not a man who takes orders. This week, in what Sadat called an invasion, Gaddafi sent a division of Libyan demonstrators into Egypt to agitate for immediate merger. He ignored Sadat's plea to call off the manifestation. No one here accepts Gaddafi's story that he's quit and had no control over the unity march. Gaddafi has often quit office before when he couldn't get his way, but he continues to run Libya. He sees himself as the eventual leader of the Arab world like Gamal Abdel Nasser was. The prospects of a vice president with such ambitions concerns Sadat deeply.
And the week ended with an awesome blast and a familiar mushroom cloud over a small island in the South Pacific. The French opened a new series of nuclear tests, and the reaction was exactly as expected. The Prime Minister of New Zealand, Norman Kirk.
It was an act of defiance, international court. It is an act carried out contrary to the wishes of the people of the South Pacific, and one that we shall protest most strongly with the French.
And there were others, among them formal protests from Australia, Sweden, Canada, and Japan, sent to Paris where officially the French government is not even acknowledging that the tests have begun. The World This Week has been produced by Harry Piloshin. I'm Alan Jackson, CBS News.